So tonight we're going to talk about this thing called Facebook. And just to get us started, how many people in here have any type of social media account, Facebook or anything at all? Excellent, excellent. How many people are still trying to figure out your VCR, how to get the 12 from flashing? Okay, that happens too sometimes. When I was at Creve Hall several years ago, they had a great event once or twice a year. They had where the Golden Group, 39ers type group, retired people would come with the teenagers and the college age. And they had a fellowship time where they were together. And one of the great things about it was some of the older members would bring board games and dominoes and things that would slow things down and teach the younger kids how to play these games. And the younger kids were there, and somebody said, well, what can the younger kids give to this process? Well, the older people would bring their cell phones and other things, and then they would train them on how to do things, how to send an email, take a selfie, and do all the things that we need to do. The best way to learn technology is to have a need for it. Years ago, we had a staff minister that was with us, and his daughter was a little older when she had her first child, the first grandchild for him, and so he was very excited about that. And up until that time, he had made fun of all of us with technology, with our phones. He had this little flip phone. He said, oh, this is all I'll ever need. It does everything I need. I don't need all that fancy stuff. But now he was 3.5 hours away from this precious little grandbaby, and all of a sudden, he came in with this brand spanking new smartphone. And so he said, I've got to learn how to do this. But unfortunately, he didn't have the same model as what his daughter had. And so he went right back the next week and switched it out for that model. And then they were able to FaceTime and do all kinds of stuff. He was the proudest guy. He would come around with his iPhone. He'd say, look at my granddaughter. And I'm like, Wavell, we've seen her 100 times. But he would go and he'd say, look at what I can do. And he, listen, having a need for technology or anything in life is part of the whole emphasis for why we learn and put things to use. You can learn a lot of facts, and if you never use them in life, they won't stay with you. They really won't. So tonight, as we get started in this thing on Facebook, I want us to go to this text message that we had. I hit that too soon. Okay, the text that you've got for the theme here, Beloved, this is in 1 Peter chapter 2. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lust, which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, that they by your good works, which they observe, may glorify God in the day of visitation. Now, one thing I do want to make you aware of, a couple things. First time I'm speaking somewhere, I like to let you know that I am reading out of the New King James Version. In case that doesn't match up with your version, this is the version I use. Also, I encourage very highly for everyone to use your device or use your Bible and to turn to these passages. I also love it when people will mark in their Bibles to highlight or underline or make additional notes to let you know the next time you turn to that page, hey, I've been here and I've learned something from this passage. Many years ago, I was in a situation where I observed as people were listening to the sermons, but not always opening their Bibles or devices to follow along. So I kind of changed my style a little bit to make sure that I slowed down enough to where we could all see things together. So what is this Facebook thing that we're talking about? Well, Facebook is itself, let's see, I've got those on the back here. I'm just going to turn around and read off this screen. This is much easier to see, David. Like you said, those are big monitors when you're right in front of them. When you're up here, it's a little bit smaller. So Facebook's founded, it's not very old at all. But I want you to think about what they've accomplished since 2004. I mean, I drive a 2011 Camry, okay? It's still good. It's still good for me, but there's been many advances. And this is a company that just skyrocketed because of the need for this social media. So in 2004, it was established. It is the third most visited site on the internet today. Google and YouTube, which are both owned by the same company, are number one and number two. And behind that is Facebook. Now, that's something. About one out of every 5 page views in the United States, it says, is going to Facebook. Somebody's looking on Facebook for something every minute. There are 2.38 billion users worldwide, 190 million users in the United States. So when you think about 350 million people and 190 million of them use this system. So it is a force to be reckoned with. We've got to know something about it and know what to do with it. 300 million photos are uploaded daily. Now, I uploaded one just this afternoon. We went to stop by Cracker Barrel on the way in and had our meal. And on the way in, before we were seated, I looked over. And I know better than to look over, but they have stuff on display. And they want to appeal to you. And I'm glad I'm not preaching on temptation tonight, because I'd have to come forward to my own lesson. But here was a little bag of Jelly Belly jelly beans. And I love those things. And you know what flavor it was? It was Krispy Kreme donut flavor. Now, I know the devil's behind that, but he had good taste in that. I mean, Krispy Kreme donut flavor Jelly Bellies. Now, I bought them strictly for research purposes to see if they are worth endorsing later on. But I posted that photo. And there have been dozens of people who have already seen it. A few people have already commented on it. Some said, yuck. Some said, oh, I love that. And so 300 million photographs a day are put up. 68% of all Americans are using Facebook. Their revenue last year was $55 billion, of which $22 billion was profit. Now, I want you to think just for a minute. How can a company that gives you everything you need for free make $55 billion? Well, because free's not always free. Free's not always free. What was read to us in the devotional earlier about Adam and Eve, and here Eve is looking at this fruit. We don't know what kind of fruit it is, but she's looking at this fruit, and she saw that it was pleasant to the eyes and wise to make her wise, and all these things were there. And she thought, that's great. There's no consequences. It's there for the taking. I can take it. It's free. Listen, everything that's in life that's going to be free is going to have some sort of connection to it. There's going to be some sort of cost with that. So going on, let's look at some of the things here on Facebook. What are some of the problems? I don't want to focus too much on the negatives. I know in this series, and by the way, I listened to the speech from 2 weeks ago on the Facebook world. David, I'm glad that I'm on your good side, that you didn't give me Victoria's Secret. I don't know what that brother from Sebring did to get on your bad side, but he won't do it again. You know? No, he did a great job talking about modesty, didn't he? He did a wonderful job talking about how all this stuff comes at you. You don't want it. You wait and watch this movie that you've waited for, and it's good, but the commercials come at you with all this evil. And he said, listen, it's there. You've got to fight against it. Well, there are good things and bad things about social media. I don't want to dwell too much on the bad things, because there are so many good things that we can do as well. So as aliens in this world, of the Facebook world, what can we do? Well, first of all, Facebook is a business. And they give you all this access to your friends and other things for free, but guess what? They are acquiring all of your information, and they sell it to people. That's why at some point when you go on Google and you search for something, then later on in your Facebook feed, there will be an ad for the same thing there. And I think some days, Dan, I don't even have to search for it. Some days I just have to think, oh, I've got heartburn, and here comes a Rolaids ad coming up. I don't know how they know to do that. I do know from the Amazon Prime from 3 weeks ago, when I was in Nashville at Creve Hall, one of the secretaries came to me and she said, Mike, she was a good friend, but and she said, Mike, do you have Amazon Prime? And I said, yes, I do. And she said, do you mind ordering this doll for my granddaughter? She wants this doll. And so I said, okay. And of course, she didn't know which one she wanted. And so my browser history had all this looking up American Girl dolls. And for the next two or three months, all of my ads had those things coming. And I told Carol later on, I said, Carol, I love you, but don't ever ask me to order something for you like that again. Listen, they want your information, and they get it, because you signed up and said, you can have all my information for free. And they made $55 billion off of your information last year. Isn't America wonderful? All right. Now, what else is wrong with Facebook? Well, sometimes there's a false sense of self-worth. Okay. How many likes do I have? How many friends do I have? How many people have visited my page? And so instead of having real face-to-face relationships, where if you have a problem, you work it out right then, where somebody says something that hurts your feelings, you tap them on the shoulder before they leave and say, hey, listen, you said something that you shouldn't have said. What else is going on? Well, it promotes a selfishness and a self-centeredness in us. All these selfies that we take. I've taken some selfies, But, you know, and sometimes you have to redo one because, you know, the tie's not straight or somebody's eyes aren't open or something. But sometimes people do this a lot just to get the perfect little pose to go on. And it becomes a self-oriented thing. Also, Facebook and social media in general and the internet in general tends to have us with fewer restrictions. We think that we're anonymous because we're behind this thing called the internet. And so even sometimes people will go on with fake accounts and they will bully other people and they will make their life really terrible and they think that they're doing this anonymously. And just like we told our kids when they're growing up, you may get away and mom and dad may not see you, but God always knows what you're doing. Okay? And Google and Facebook, they always know what you're doing too. All right? Peer pressure becomes really intense. Really intense peer pressure. Okay? What's coming at you? What are you supposed to be doing? All my friends are doing this. And so now all of a sudden we feel like we must do it as well. Sometimes also wandering eyes come on to see some things. Facebook has been cited in some studies as being a principal part of some marriages falling apart. And sometimes it's because a spouse will find an old boyfriend or girlfriend on Facebook. They get to chatting from time to time, and then that interferes with the current marriage. That's not supposed to be happening. That's a drawback here. I've already mentioned about fake accounts and bullying. It's an addictive process. There is an app on our phones that will tell us if we've been on the phone for a long time, our screen time, and it tells us about how long we've been online. I don't really want to know that because my phone is not a toy. It's a tool because I'm a minister, see, so I need these things. And actually, there are some tremendous things, and I'm so blessed, and we are also blessed to have great technology at our fingertips. We've got a directory. I don't know if you've got an instant church directory or not, but we've got a directory. Costs the church about $40 a year. Everybody in the membership has it for free. I can pull up any member. I can touch on their address. It goes from where I am to where they are. It gives me turn-by-turn directions. All kinds of information all at our fingertips. Well, let's talk about the fact that sometimes these things are going to be not well received. I want to spend just a moment now and go through six different types of media that have occurred in our histories. And how did the Christians react to these things? First and foremost, there was the printing press. There was the printing press. If you've ever been in trouble in school and had to write 100 times, "I will not talk in class," then you would have really appreciated having copy and paste on a computer or a printing press so that you could generate 100 lines of that immediately. But instead, we know the pains of having to write that out line by line. The scribes used to do that. Copiers also would do that as well. Well, in the 1500s, there was a fellow by the name of William Tyndale. And William Tyndale was translating the Bible into English. And he was doing this, and he was using the printing press as a means of getting the English Bible out to the common people. Up until that time, the Bibles had been held just with the clergy. As a matter of fact, there was one type of Bible that was a chained Bible. It was chained to the pulpit because it was so expensive, because each page had to be lettered by hand. And so the printing press was changing this. And what also William Tyndale was doing, he was going against King Henry. And King Henry was not wanting to do like the Catholic Church wanted him to do. And so he had William Tyndale arrested, because he was going against him with some printed pamphlets as well as the Bible. And then in about 1536, I think it was, they had him executed. They had him executed. And so here was the man who translated the Bible. In the King James Version of the Bible, we're told about 75 to 80% of the King James Bible is based on Tyndale's translations. And that came about 80 years later in 1611. But they strangled him, then they burned his body. And then later on, they got mad at him again, I think, and dug it up and did more things to his bones. They really didn't like him. But see, Christianity did not accept that media of print right away. When radio came on the scene, there were great discussions about why we should do something or not do something with radio. It was seen as the devil's playground. And so we didn't embrace it right away. But thankfully, a lot of churches did. V.E. Howard, followed by Winfred Claiborne years later, started the International Gospel Hour. And so he would broadcast the message of Jesus Christ all throughout this nation. And that radio program is still going on. But initially, the churches did not embrace it. We also found the same thing with TV. TV was another toy for Satan. And so the TV would come on. It was very expensive, and some of the things there were just out of our control. And it took a long time for the churches to really embrace that and to say, hey, there's some good in this as well. Just because it's being used for some things we don't agree with doesn't mean we can't use it for things that are good. Herald of Truth and other programs were nationwide, and even today we've got some programs that are still going on locally that have been there for years and years. Then we get into cable. I was looking for a good graphic on cable. If you're old enough to remember what these schematics look like, you know the frustration of having three different remotes, one for the sound system, one for the TV, one for the cable box, and then you can never find the right remote and find the right buttons. But here is a schematic of this, how complicated it used to be to get these signals. And now all you have to do is just pick up a device, launch an app, and it's streamed wirelessly to you. You know, when cable boxes became popular, many churches were worried because they said, now the devil has, he's broadened his approach and his appeal. He's got more and more territory now, more channels to draw people in, and they're going to spend all of their time on TV and not doing other things. Well, churches began to realize this media is fantastic because now we've got more channels than ever, and they need programming. They need people to provide them with programming. And so more and more local cable stations were offering TV time on Sunday mornings to stream live services and to have other programs on there as well. Then also we have the internet age. And this is the one that most of us remember firsthand. I remember being in Mayfield, Kentucky when we were discussing whether or not to establish a web page for the church there. And we had a heated discussion about whether or not we should enter into something, because guess what? The internet is the devil's playground. It's a tool for the devil. All of these evil things that are there, all of the pornography and bad things that are there, and why should the church be involved? But have you noticed something that's a trend? In each of these types of medias, as we're beginning to see what was once seen as exclusively evil, then we begin to see that there are some advantages. And before long, the church warms up to that, and then we begin to use it. And that was the same thing with cable TV, with internet, and finally with social media. And so with social media, we have the same type of thing happening. Now in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11, there's a phrase there that I want to focus on just for a minute. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 11 says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them." Now, I love the whole book of Ephesians, and I kind of hesitate just to take this one verse out for the moment because it's not in its full context. But do you notice what Paul's saying here? He says, don't have any fellowship with unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. So I want to ask you, if it's the internet, if it's a web page, Palm Beach Lakes has a tremendous web page. I tell you, I've enjoyed going through. You've got some great, talented people here in the past who have taught some Bible classes and had sermons. You've done a tremendous job. You also use YouTube, and YouTube is a very popular. It's the second most visited web page in all of the internet. But you know, it's inherently evil because there's so many bad things that are there. And so, how do we justify this? When Paul's saying, "Have no," what does he say? "Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them." And again, we go back to the printing press, and we go back to the radio and television and cable TV and the internet and social media, and the same type of thought process was going through with church leaders all throughout each of these stages. And that was, this is the devil's territory, and we shouldn't be in there. But then they begin to see the truth, which is the following. Out of all these things, media is neither good nor evil. It's what you do with it. It's how you use it that makes the difference. When I've got this phone here, this phone to me is a tool. It's something that I use, and it's, if I ever leave it behind, I am just really, really hurting, because I can do virtually anything I need to do from the office right here on this phone. It's a tool, but it's a technology tool. Some people use this for evil. Some people use this for good. in our setup at Concord Street, I use this to film the sermons up close and with a special microphone. And then within a few minutes after our sermon ends, I edit it very quickly on this device and then upload it to Facebook. And afterwards, you know, there are hundreds of people that are able to see that within just a few minutes of the end of our service. That's a good thing that we use it for. But there are other people that use these devices and media for evil. So as we go through, let's look at just two different sections and ways that we can look at how we can use social media and Facebook in general. And the first of these, if you'll turn with me over to Proverbs chapter 12, Proverbs chapter 12, we'll start here talking about on our personal use, we need to have some rules. We need to choose friends wisely. Now, you know about Facebook and friends, and sometimes friend requests will come through. I'm friends with David on Facebook. I'm happy to be his friend. Sometimes there are some people that pop up that want to be my friend, and I'm like, I don't think I need to be your friend. I don't really know you. I don't know anything about you. I don't know what your desires are. Well, look at this in Proverbs 12 and verse 26. It says, "The righteous should choose his friends carefully, for the way of the wicked leads them astray." Now think of this, not just for the young people, but also for older people. Be careful who you associate with. I recall when our boys were young and they'd go off to school and we'd try to coach them and say, now, we want you to be friendly to everybody, but choose your really close friends carefully. We don't want them to unduly influence you in a bad way. Also now, in the next chapter, verse 20, "He who walks with the wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed." And so think about how you choose your friends. I don't know exactly how many friends I have on Facebook, but I don't really know all of them. Again, when I was at Creve Hall in Nashville, a rather large congregation, and sometimes people would come through and they would see me as I'm shaking hands. They'd come up and say, I wanted to introduce myself to you. I'm so-and-so. We've been friends on Facebook for 5 years, but I've never met you before. We've been friends through other people. But choose your friends wisely. It's the same in real life as it is in social media. You want to have people around you who are going to help you to be better and to get to heaven. That's of primary importance in our life. Also, let's think in terms of the influences that we have. Have you ever been in a situation where everybody else was thinking one way and before long you began thinking the same way? You know, peer pressure works that way a lot. Peer pressure works that way. Maybe you've been hungry for a while and you've really got your mouth set for Chick-fil-A. I mean, you really have that Chick-fil-A sandwich in your mind right now. If you haven't had supper yet tonight, I'm sorry. But you've been really thinking about Chick-fil-A and you're out with a group of friends and everybody else wants to go to McDonald's. And you're thinking, McDonald's? Oh, why would you want to go to McDonald's over Chick-fil-A? But before long, guess what? The influence is there, and you may find yourself at McDonald's as well. So let's think about our influence. In 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, Paul says, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." Evil company corrupts good habits. Many years ago, when I was still working in the corporate world, there was an occasion where we went from being a smoking facility to a non-smoking facility. And it was great that we didn't have to worry with all the smoke smells anymore. And it was tremendous because before we'd have to wear our suits, we'd go into the offices and we'd come home, you had to dry clean them all the time. And after we were non-smoking, it was wonderful because you could come home and not have to dry clean your suits as often. You didn't smell like smoke. One afternoon, I stopped by to get some gas, and this was before you could pay at the pump, so I had to go into the little gas station to pay. And as I walked in, I opened the door to this little Quickie Mart, and it was like a huge wall of smoke. The whole place was filled with smoke. And I walked in quickly and paid and walked out. And as soon as I got home that night, my wife said, "Where have you been? You reek of smoke." And I promise, you know, Carla, I was just there getting gas. You can look at the credit card statement later. But just in that short period of time, that short exposure to that smoke smell, it lingered. And guess what happens? Your exposure to evil influences in this world, they linger with you. Now, the flip side of that is every time somebody sees the good and the righteous acts that you do, it's going to linger with them. They're going to remember how you handle difficult situations as a Christian. And even if they weren't influenced at the moment to do well, they will be as time goes on. Also on this about influence, let's remember 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Be sober and be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, he walks about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. Now, as we've been going through some of these passages, and you've noticed I'm looking at my Bible, I'm reading them. I have nothing against people who memorize all the passages. That's wonderful. I'm all for that. We ought to do more of that. But also, one of the things that I really try to emphasize is for everyone to have your device or your Bible and look and meditate and dwell upon the words and what they mean, and look and maybe underline these things as we go around. Remember, this is your adversary and my adversary, the devil, and he's looking for any opportunity to get into our lives. Well, let's go back over to the book of Proverbs, and let's go to Proverbs chapter 17. In Proverbs chapter 17 here, we're going to be talking about watching your tongue. Watching your tongue. I tell you, James says that the tongue is just a small member, but oh, it's so mighty. James chapter 3 has a whole section there talking about the tongue. How like a rudder, a small rudder, turns such a great ship, and such a small spark starts a great forest fire. And that's the way the tongue is. It's unruly. You can't tame it. That doesn't mean that we can say it's not within my power, because it is. It's within our power to change what we're saying. So here in Proverbs 17, verses 27 and 28, he who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace, and when he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive. Now dwell on that just for a moment. Isn't that kind of an insult to think that, you know, a foolish person just by remaining silent is seen as being perceptive and wise because they're just sitting and contemplating it. But there's so much wisdom in holding our tongue and waiting until we say something. Over in James, when he says, you know, be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath or anger. Why is it that we should be swift to hear? Be willing to take in all the information, but be measured in your response. Be measured in your judgment and in the words that you use. There's so many opportunities online for people to jump in and to do things and to say things that they will almost instantly regret. Social media is really a bad place at times for the free expression of people's thoughts. And the bad thing about it is that everything that you put up on the internet stays there forever. It really does. And so the words that you use, be sure that you use those words wisely. You don't want to get into a relationship issue with other people. And that brings me to Proverbs 15 and verse 1. Proverbs 15 and verse 1. And this is to avoid arguments. To avoid arguments. I think it's so important that we learn to avoid arguments. Paul was speaking over in the New Testament, Romans, and he's talking to this great section about behave like a Christian. And he gets to this one verse, and you know it well, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Every time I'm in that passage, every time I'm preaching or teaching on it, I pause there to interject a little preacher into it. And as much as depends on you, parentheses, Mike adds, it's all within your control. Be at peace with all men. Because even our enemies, even though they're still against us, guess what Jesus told us on the Sermon on the Mount? He said, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you, spitefully use you. Be good towards those people. The one that takes your coat, give him your cloak also in the court. The one who is going to hit you on the one side, you turn the other side. The one that says, hey, here I'm a soldier. You take my pack 1 mile and you go with him too. What's Jesus telling us? Jesus is saying you have the capacity and the ability to really change the outcome of any situation. You don't have to repay evil for evil. You don't have to attend every argument you're invited to. You don't have to go with vile types of reactions when you shouldn't. So in this section here in verse 1 of chapter 15, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. A harsh word stirs up anger. We have a little dachshund dog. His name is Barkley. It was a cute name at first because he never barked. And then he found out what the name meant, and now he barks. He's a great little watchdog and stuff. But there are times that you want to communicate with Barkley, but his vocabulary is very limited. his vocabulary of understanding our words is very limited. He knows crate, and he knows outside. He knows about treat. He knows those words. But you know what the real key is when you talk to an animal? It's not so much the words you use, but it's the tone. It's the way that you deliver those words. And so if you don't believe me, just go home and try to tell your wife, "I love you." She's not going to believe you too much. You got to say it with the right meaning. And so when we get to these issues about avoiding arguments, when you get on social media, there are going to be all kinds of people ready to take issue with you. And guess what? Most of them don't have a clue what they're really willing to argue about. I'm on Twitter just for the sake of following some sports teams so that I can know the outcome of some ball games. We ditched our satellite over a year ago, and so now our sports we watch through the internet, and there's some delay, and it's very frustrating, especially March Madness and times like that. You want to know the outcome of the ball games, and so I found that social media is very good because I can see 2 or 3 seconds ahead of time what the future is going to be. And it's so wonderful because I can come back through where Carla's watching the game and said, "I bet he's going to fall back behind the three-point line and shoot and hit a game winner while he's falling to the floor." And then it happens, and it's like, "You're a prophet." No, she never says I'm a prophet. She knows I already know because I'm watching on Twitter. But Twitter is one of the most vile places for people to have no respect for one another. And it's like they don't even care if people know who they are. They use language that shouldn't be used. I think that's next week, the language issue on aliens in this world. And so let's avoid the arguments. Let's look at this other passage. Verse 18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays or postpones or puts aside contention. Here again, this sense of being able to delay what we're wanting to say to someone and not get caught up in that. Let's go over very quickly to chapter 26 and verse 17. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like the one who takes a dog by the ears. Now, our dog Barkley, he loves his ears rubbed and played with. He would not like it if I tried to pick him up by the ears. That's mean. That's mean. And guess what? Guess what? The Bible says that when we go and interject ourselves into somebody else's fight, somebody else's quarrel, that's not the proper thing to do. So when we think about social media, there are some really bad and tempting things of it. There's some really good things as well. But from a personal use perspective, let's focus on following the simple rules just like you would with any face-to-face relationship. And that would be choose your friends wisely. Beware of the evil influences in your life. Watch your tongue at all times. Let no corrupt word come out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification. And avoid the arguments. Now, there's another section of this as well, and that would be the church section. And when the church use is coming up, I tell you, there's some great things that we do with the churches. We have public and private pages as well. At Concord Street, we have several public pages, or private pages rather, VBS and Sunshine Street, and one for our teens, and we have one for certain quadrants, and they can communicate, and nobody else can see what they're saying, which is great. And so you can do this. You can have a wonderful ease of communications. You don't have to wait for the Postal Service to come and take your stamped envelope and deliver it a couple days later. It's instantaneous. If you need to coordinate food for someone or a prayer request that goes out, these are wonderful, tremendous things. And then we also have a public side of Facebook, and that would be where you have, just like your Facebook page here, somebody like me who's not a member here can go to that Facebook page and see about the events that are going on. They can see about upcoming events, Vacation Bible School. Sometimes you can have that to where they can register through Facebook and have their children already pre-registered. Lots of great things that can happen. And I also have mentioned here about baptisms. Don't you love to see people baptized? I don't care who it is that's baptizing them. If it's their father baptizing the children, that's just precious. If it's the preacher, that's okay. If it's the one doing the Bible study. But I love to see somebody when they put on Christ. Here's a picture of one of our latest baptisms here. And what I want you to notice is down at the bottom. This was on June the 9th. This fellow was baptized by Lucas Vasconcelos, who's our Hispanic minister. And that picture on our page was shared 88 times, and here we are the 26th of June, and it's reached 15,000 people. 15,000 people saw the photograph of this man being baptized. I shared that with Lucas today. He said, I hope he doesn't have any warrants out for him, you know, and he was joking about that. He didn't think that the man had any warrants or anything. He said, but with that many people seeing that, there's going to be some influence. You betcha. You know, so here it is, you know, is media good or evil? Well, it's neither. It's how you use it and what we do with it. So let's go back over to Ephesians as we start to wrap this up. Ephesians chapter 4, and let's look at just this one last passage here. We'll begin in verse 29 and go down through verse 32. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath, anger and clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ has forgiven you. I tell you, every time I come to this passage, there's so many wonderful things in the book of Ephesians. But when I come here and see all of these evil things and bad things, and he says, wrap it all up and don't let it come out of your mouth. Don't let that be a part of your character at all. Now, there wasn't social media back then. But if they had social media, Paul would have said the same types of rules apply there as they apply in our relationships with one another. And the last section here, let's back up to verse 8 for it. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. That's the whole process as we continue to develop as disciples all through our lifetime. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Let me pause there for a moment to say there are unfruitful works of darkness that will reside in various forms of media. Don't have any association with them, but think on terms of the media is not the evil that is there. Evil uses the media like good can use it. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore, he says, awake you who sleep and arise from the dead, and Christ will give you life. Well, friends, those are the things I think that we can have when we think about what are we doing with our social media. There are so many good things that we have in this life to look forward to. And social media is just one among many things that help us to communicate with one another, help us to be able to see and have prayer requests. I can't begin to tell you how many times I've been able to see somebody just this past week with Laura Jenkins having passed away, and my good friend Steve Higginbotham, his mother passed away, and there are four or five other people with really traumatic things that were going on in their lives. I'm hundreds of miles away from all of them, but I could express my thoughts to them, and I could go to my Father in prayer with them, and they are emboldened and they are supported by that, and it's all made possible by these media that we use. That's a lesson for tonight. I hope that it's been informative to you. I hope that through all of this, you don't just lump everything up and throw it out to say that's the work of the devil. But remember, these are tools, and we can use all of these things for the goodness of the kingdom of God. I appreciate your attention tonight. Let's close with a prayer.